This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hey everybody, it's the Hockey News Podcast. Matt Larkin here with Ken Campbell and Ryan Kennedy. And I am praying that this podcast is actually going to exist. We had a great podcast last week, I swear, but somehow it got deleted. If it happens again, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm going
to
lose it. Yeah, we're recording on three different devices, so somehow, some way, this podcast is going to reach your ears, I pray. But lots to talk about. Now we're into the thick of the season, I guess, right? Even 1 week in, there's lots happening.
Everything is happening right now.
Tonight.
Maybe nothing will happen.
Maybe nothing.
Maybe nobody will win this game.
That's right. and we're going to start with the Vegas Golden Knights, who have surprised me in so many different ways already. One by winning both of their games. What? Because in the lost podcast, the Atlantis of podcast, by the way, I said they would win their 10th game by Christmas. And now it's going to be
Halloween.
It might be Halloween.
I said they'd win their first game.
There we go. Boom. Yeah. So they're winning, and they're also doing weird things with their roster because Alex Tuch, Shea Theodore, Vadim Shpachev, the three guys who are waiver exempt, get sent down. Probably the three best players or three of their best players, which look pretty embarrassing, in my opinion, for George McPhee. And then, lo and behold, rumor has it, Vadim Shpachev and his camp with agent Peter Svoboda is very unhappy with the situation. There were some exaggerated reports of maybe a trade request or returning to the KHL. To me, either way, even the fact that it's being rumored is a pretty bad sign that this thing has been bungled. What do you guys think?
Well, the optics don't look good. They really don't look good when you sign a guy to that kind of contract and he comes with that kind of fanfare. And now, you know, you're not dealing with a market like Toronto or Chicago or New York, where people can go, oh, okay, I get this, right? Like, right. I get this. You know, there's roster manipulation here. We got to wait. He's a good player. You know, we'll get him sooner or later and everything's going to be fine. You're dealing with a market that doesn't really probably understand a lot of this stuff. And they're sitting there going, what the hell? We signed this guy and he was supposed to be so good. He was supposed to be our first line center. And now he's what? Okay, so let me get this straight. He's been signed. We're paying him. We're not playing him. He's not even playing for the minor league team. He's still in Las Vegas, we think, or he might be in Chicago, but we think he's in Las Vegas, and we have no idea when he's going to be playing. It's not a good... The optics don't look good, and especially in a market where people don't understand the nuances of the NHL because they haven't been exposed to them.
That's a great point.
It's interesting to me because Vegas is winning. James Neal is basically scoring all their goals, and that's fantastic early on. But, you would like to see some clarity. And, you know, if he has to go down to the minors.
Oh, go ahead. Let's just stop and take it.
We'll stop here. Ken's getting a phone call. Hey, everybody. If things sounded weird for a second there, it was because George McPhee just called us. He just called Ken, and we actually now have the real lowdown on what's going on with Shpachev. So, Ken, explain what Mr. McPhee just told you.
Well, I don't think it's any secret. I mean, he said that, you know, I mean, this is a... None of them are happy. None of these three guys are happy about this situation. Tuck's not happy about it. Shea Theodore, who I think is leading the AHL in scoring right now,
is
not real crazy about it. And Shpachev's not really crazy about it. He's not happy either. But he doesn't want to go back to Russia. McPhee told me he does not want to go back to Russia. He can't go back to Russia. He doesn't have a contract there. He has a contract with the NHL. And basically that there's no timetable on when these guys are going to be back, but he says they're going to be back. There's going to be roster manipulations. There's going to be injuries. He said we could have three guys break their toes tomorrow, and these three guys will be back in the lineup. So I wouldn't say it's exactly much ado about nothing, because it isn't much ado about nothing, but I think in the end, basically what we're going to see is that these guys are going to find their way into the lineup. You know, the same way Thomas Chabot will in Ottawa, who was, he was just called up this weekend, I think. And, you know, some of these other guys that, you know, I mean, 6 months from now, we probably won't be talking about this. And if we are, then it's really an issue. But I don't get the sense that George McPhee has really got his knickers in a knot about this. And it's just one of those things that they have to do, and they have to buy their time and wait. and figure out what they're going to do with their team.
Yeah, and I mean, the positive thing is they're winning right now. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like if they were losing and you could say like, oh man, if only they had Shipachev and Tuck and Theodore, then it might be a big issue. I think, you know, it's not the best look because I was sort of making the analogy to if you're having a garage sale and there's a couple of items left that you don't want, at some point you just have to go inside the house and leave it on the curb and hope someone takes it. I know Vegas has some players that they just want to get rid of.
Yeah, they're the coach that I'm trying to sell on Kijiji.
Yeah, exactly.
And we're talking about Lucas Visa, right?
We're talking. There are some defensemen.
Sorry, Griffin Reinhardt.
Yeah, there are some defensemen that they would like to part with, and nobody else wants, and that's kind of the problem right now.
Yeah.
But at some point, I think you just have to say, like, well, let's just waive these guys and move on because it's for the better of the club. But I'd also like to point out that even though Shipachev was one of their marquee signings, he's an older player, has never played over here for more than like a week or two in international competition. I don't know yet if he's a good NHLer.
Yeah, I don't think anybody does.
He wasn't good.
Assumed, but yeah.
Like, anytime he's played against North Americans internationally, he hasn't been good. Whether it was the Olympics or World Cup or any event like that, he hasn't been good.
Right.
So he might not even be what Vegas needs. I mean, it's a good experiment for them, and it was a good opportunity for him. Like, if he was to, you know, go to a contending team and flame out, it would be pretty obvious pretty quickly.
Right.
But at least in Vegas, like, the expectations this year are, let's get together, see what we have, put on a good show for the fans, and, you know, be a solid and at least respectable club. But it was a nice landing place for him, so I can see why he would want to stick around, because he still has a great opportunity that he wouldn't have in most other markets.
Very true. And we can stick with Vegas a little bit here, because one thing I wanted to bring up today was just looking at a few of these fast-starting teams. And it's almost like the three teams that I personally had finishing 29-30-31 are combined 6-0, or 6-1, which is Colorado, New Jersey, and, of course, Vegas. At this point in the season, are you seeing anything from those teams that you're actually excited about, or is it just offensively early to even bring up such a topic right now?
It's offensively early.
Oh my god.
It's like Connor McDavid getting a hat trick in his first game and Jaromir Jagr saying he's going to score 100 goals.
But what about Jesper Bratt?
Jesper Bratt?
He looks awesome.
Yeah, he looks awesome. Talk to me 20 games into the season.
Yeah.
And if he still looks awesome, then we got something. This guy never even played in the first division. This guy didn't even play in the top Swedish league. Right. And I'm not saying he can't play in the NHL, but I'm just saying that, I mean, I've seen this before lots of times. We see this a lot of times. And
Fabian Brunstrom.
Yeah, and I mean, Jesper Bratt may end up being the Calder Trophy winner this year. But I think we need 20, 25, 30 games where he's, you know, if he's got 27 points after 30 games, then we start saying, okay, this guy is for real. But, you know, I mean, we're talking about teams that have started well and not started well. I would be more likely to think that the teams that have started well are going to fall off than the teams that haven't started well are just going to keep sort of bumbling along. You know what I mean? And that seems to be, you know, the kind of way things sort of even out. Ken Holland is a guy that, as you guys know, I really respect what he has to say and what he thinks and a lot of the things that he's come up with. And one of his things has always been Thanksgiving, American Thanksgiving. Not Canadian Thanksgiving, American Thanksgiving.
Right.
You are what you are at American Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. If you're a playoff team at American Thanksgiving, you're probably going to make the playoffs. If you're not, you're probably not. You know, so that's kind of my demarcation point.
Yeah,
and so
about 6 more weeks from now. Yeah,
right, exactly.
Yeah. I think if you're in New Jersey right now, it's a great sign that guys like Bratt and Heischer and Will Butcher are contributing right away.
Yeah.
And it's a sign that Ray Shiro's plan is working. And I agree. I don't think New Jersey's going to be competitive in that division for the entire season. But it's nice for those kids to get a good start, get some confidence, see that they can hang, you know, with the best in the league.
They played Colorado and Buffalo.
I should say the best in the world, not the best in the league.
The best hockey players in the world.
The best hockey players.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of funny how some of these teams have just been playing each other.
Yeah.
You know, it's like New Jersey, Colorado.
Cannibalizing each other.
Yeah, and even like on the other end, like, you know, Dallas played Vegas, and Buffalo has played a couple of those teams, yeah, and Montreal. I think with Dallas, it's probably a matter of the slow start being, one, they played Vegas, who's playing their first game ever, so I knew Vegas was going to win that game. Just based off that, you know, there's so much more adrenaline on that, and even though the game is in Dallas. But you also have Ken Hitchcock coming in. Mm-hmm. They have to get used to him.
There's a buy-in time. There's a buy-in time that it's going to take to buy in.
There's going
to
be new systems and structures. Yeah. There's going to be little, you know,
and there's
going
to be players to win over. Players are going to have to be won over.
Exactly.
I mean, one of the things when Hitchcock came into St. Louis, one of the things that really helped was that David Backes was on board right from the start.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody followed, and that's why they were able to be successful right away when Hitchcock got there.
Yeah.
I, you know, I don't know how Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin and all these other guys feel about this playing this way. I, you know, maybe they're all on board. I don't know, but it takes some time.
Yeah, it's fair. And even based on, I mean, it's a stereotype based on just the style of play, but Tyler Seguin doesn't seem to me like the kind of guy that's going to be first in line to, you know, shave 15 points off his total and play really responsible defense. He wouldn't be the guy at the top of my list,
well,
that's all I'm saying.
And I mean, I was in a hockey pool last week and somebody was talking about Jamie Benn. And I said, look, guys, Jamie Benn is not going to put up Boffo numbers this year, I don't think. He may end up being a better player.
Right.
He may end up being a better all-around player this year than he's been the last 4 or 5 years without having the numbers that
Like Mike Modano.
Right, exactly.
Mike Modano's numbers went down. He scored 50 goals. He had 90 points.
Because of the Hitchcock effect.
Because of
the Hitchcock effect.
Right, that's fair. One thing, it's funny, out of the fast starters, I agree it's way too early, but I'm a little bit intrigued, just a teensy-weensy little bit, by New Jersey.
Why
because
do that?
Just for fun. You know, it's a podcast, bro.
Yeah, okay.
and what jumps out of me about New Jersey, it's the same thing, it's the reverse of what I saw in Florida last year. So people said, what's wrong with the Panthers? What's wrong with them? I said, well, they're an entirely different team. They changed like 60% of the personnel, so we have to evaluate them as a completely new team. Yeah. And the Devils have changed a ton of their personnel. Marcus Johansson's there, Will Butcher's in the lineup, Nico Hischier's in the lineup, Drew Stafford. Like they're just a different team, so we can't really evaluate them the exact same way we did last year.
No, we
just
can't.
They have different guys.
Absolutely, and you know, I mean, if New Jersey can hang around and you know stay in the mix for a good part of this season, I mean, these two wins that they've picked up in October are going to be as important as two wins in April, right? So, I mean, you don't want to poo-poo it that much because they're 2-0 and they've got 4 points.
Yeah.
I mean, there's something to be said about that.
Yeah. Structurally, my worry is still their defense core.
Yeah.
And once they play some teams that are very potent, for example, the Toronto Maple Leafs are coming up on the docket. That could be an issue for them. We'll have to wait and see. Hey, maybe the Devils shut them out. You never know. But going to Buffalo, another one of those struggling teams, and doesn't seem like the defensive changes they made were that great. I know Nathan Beaulieu's possession numbers are pretty decent, but it's only been two games, and he got walked for a bad goal the other night.
That surprises people.
Well, you know, confirmation bias, I guess. And Ryan O'Reilly calling himself out for not being hard on, you know, the opponent.
And in Game 3, when guys are calling themselves out in Game 3.
Yeah, it's like you kind of respect it for him being public, but at the same time, it's like if you know you need to take away time
be
and
space, better.
Why don't you just do it? But that I feel bad for Buffalo fans because I know they're so passionate and they're very excited about their team, but it's like, it's the first week and it already feels like they're out of it.
I know. I can't explain it, but I agree. Even though they got a new coach, they got a new GM, it should be, you know, hope springs eternal. But I kind of had that feeling, too, just hearing the boos. Even the fact that the fans are turning on them in Game 3 of the season, Game 2, whatever
it is. And it all started out so well. Like, Jack Eichel signs the big extension.
Yeah.
And there we are.
And like, Evander Kane is, like, red hot.
He's got 4 goals.
Yeah.
He's got 4 goals.
Jack Eichel's point per game. You
He's
know?
The highest scoring Kane in the NHL.
There you go.
Yes. Wow.
Yeah.
Another team that's off to a slow start that, I mean, is getting a lot of attention for it is Montreal. Obviously, they got blitzed by the Capitals. Ovechkin single-handedly just, you know, buried Carey Price in that game. What do you guys think? Are you worried? Should Mark Bergevin be worried about his job?
He should be.
A lot of our reader questions, which we're going to cover now, were about Montreal. So we'll get to the other reader questions later, but since a lot were about Montreal, we may as well talk Montreal right now.
Well, I have a good friend by the name of Simon Zemberg, who used to be the PR guy for the IIHF. He's been around world hockey forever.
Yep.
He was at the Leafs game last night, and I don't think he'll mind me saying this. And if he does, too bad, Simon.
Yeah, well, he tweets about it all the time.
I don't care. He says, I hope the Chicago Blackhawks beat the Montreal Canadiens 10-1 so that it will prompt some changes.
It's a really good impression of
him, yeah. So anyways, he's a big passionate Montreal guy, and he thinks they're going straight to hell on a handcart. Like, mm-hmm. he just thinks it's breakneck speed and there's major flaws in this team, but we saw that.
They are we who saw we that, thought didn't they
we?
Were.
Yeah, we saw that, didn't
especially
we?
Especially on defense, like they brought in Carl Olivner, but you don't want to get slower when you're going to play Toronto and Tampa Bay 16 times in the season. And look what happened against the Capitals, which have a lot of run and gun speed up front as well.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Is the Washington game was a perfect example of the flaw in Carey Price, and there are very few flaws in Carey Price, but if you're not intimidated by him, then a little of that magic goes away. So we've seen it in the playoffs when they were against Tampa Bay. And with Ovechkin, Ovechkin's one of the best goal scorers of the past, 30 years. He doesn't care if it's Carey Price in net. He's going to shoot like he always does. He's going to shoot hard. He's going to shoot accurate. And that just took out Montreal super early in that game. I think the game was over before the three-minute mark.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So you just, put that over an 82-game schedule, and if teams don't fear Carey Price, what are you left with?
It's fair.
An offense and a slow defense.
And an offense that doesn't know how to deploy itself. And that's been the consistent problem in the Bergevin era, is just, the repeated throwing of Galchenyuk under the bus and often publicly, and just not knowing. Like a team that just still doesn't seem to have a first line center. Maybe it's going to be Drouin, but it's early, and they just don't seem to know how to deploy their, especially at forward, their personnel. I don't know. That worries me. If I'm a Montreal fan, I am worried right now.
I would be too. Yeah. I would be too. Yep.
Yeah. Also in the news the last couple of days is Peter Forsberg popping up to talk some Avalanche and made a pretty epic statement about that Matt Duchene should be buried on the bench, and he should be traded, and he's stealing the energy away from the team.
Did in the first game when he was their best player?
Yeah, that was my first thought.
Like he's doing that?
Like, I don't know. But,
yeah.
Do you guys think, does Forsberg have something? Should he not be butting in? I don't know. I personally think the season's, it's a brand new day, and the team is still competitive on paper on day one. Every team's got a chance, and Duchene obviously makes your team better when he's in the lineup, so if he's healthy and ready to play. And also, his trade value, arguably, is as low as it's ever been because he's coming off a bad year. So if he can play well, he might actually up his value. So I see the merit in having him in the lineup.
Well, yeah. You bury him on the bench, and you scratch him. That's gonna solve something.
Right.
Yeah. What does that solve? Does it solve anything?
Who wants to trade for a rusty Matt Duchene?
He can't get injured.
That's about it. That's the only motivation.
Yeah. I've spent time with Matt Duchene over the years. We've done photo shoots with him. He's not the kind of hockey player that's gonna let his teammates down. No. He's not the kind of hockey player that's gonna sulk. And I think
that's why he showed up.
That's why he showed up.
That's why
he
went to
camp. I'm playing for my teammates. And that's what this guy does, And here's a conspiracy theory. The Avs are a mess in terms of just,
everything.
Their GM is Joe Sakic, whose former teammate is Peter Forsberg.
Right.
So who's Peter Forsberg going to side with in this debate?
Yeah.
The guy that helped him win two Stanley Cups or some young player that he's maybe never met before?
Yeah, that's fair.
And is currently a problem for his old buddy.
And his old buddy created the problem.
Yeah.
like it's not like Matt Duchene said, hey, can you dick me around and screw me around for a couple months?
Yeah.
Like, no one's punched me in the face lately, kicked me in the groin. So, hey, how about you just dick me around for a while?
Yeah.
And we'll see how that all turns out. Like, this is Joe Sakic's making.
Yeah.
He's the one who created this mess.
Mm. And honestly, with Matt Duchene, and you're right, Ryan, like, he, we've all interviewed many, many players, hundreds of players, whatever, thousands of players, and Duchesne is absolutely billions one of the stand-up, billions, trillions. Yeah. But Duchesne is one of the absolute stand-up guys, in my opinion, in the sport.
Yeah.
One of the most sincere, just down-to-earth. So I don't know. It's
he might be the hockeyest of the hockey players. Yeah, he's just like, he's a team guy. He's super nice. All he wants to do is win. You know, I remember when we visited, you know, he had like a gym in his parents' basement, and every year, as soon as the Stanley Cup was won, he would print out a picture of the captain holding the, you know, hoisting the Stanley Cup, whatever team it was. And that was his motivation, because that he wants to be that player one year. He wants to be hoisting the Stanley Cup.
That's pretty cool.
And they don't take tools on Team Canada. They don't take them. They just don't take guys that are bad people on those teams. I don't know him as well as you guys do. I've actually met his parents and talked to his parents quite a bit. And I've talked to him a few times. But, I mean, they generally speaking, they do their due diligence on these guys before they pick them for, you know, Olympic teams, World Cup teams. And they they don't pick dicks.
They make character picks.
Yeah.
I saw Duchesne at the All-Star game in Nashville because everyone, you know, he's a country music guy.
Yeah.
And I saw him maybe three or four times in a row. A new person walked up to him and said, "Hey, Matt, I hear you like country music. Tell me what it's like to be here in Nashville." And he like took a deep breath and answered, long answer, full sincerity. Person walks away. Another reporter walks up. Exact same question.
Yeah, I can't believe those guys don't want to kill people by the end of that. Because it happens in the Stanley Cup final on media day.
Yeah.
Like, and the guy just... He just...
They say the veiled anger is, like I said.
As I said before.
Yeah. Yeah. But Duchesne, like, he acted like it was an amazing question he'd never been asked before, and I thought, man, I was impressed. It was a stand-up move. Speaking of stand-up moves, what a transition. JT Brown, he's not doing the opposite of standing, which would be kneeling, but he is clenching his fist, or raising his fist. Like, it's clenched as well.
It's clenched.
Yeah, it's raised and clenched during the national anthem. Yeah. You know, an alternative way to protest. What do you guys think? Were you impressed by the maneuver? Do you think it's still an issue we should be discussing, or players should be not shying away from? Or what did you think when you heard that he did it?
Well, JT Brown is an African American hockey player. Mm-hmm. An African American hockey player. I mean, this is what we're talking about here. And he says this is a conversation that we have to have. Didn't show any disrespect, still stood, you know, clenched his hand in the air, which has some pretty incredible sort of historical ramifications it, right? But showed the due respect and showed the respect to the game and to the anthem. And I have absolutely no problem with what he did and what he said, because JT Brown is a player that, I mean, he can speak as more of an authority on this issue than probably anyone in hockey can.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, because Devontae Smith-Pelly came out a couple days later and was saying that, you know, it's tough for black hockey players because they're usually the only one in the dressing room, so they don't have a lot of shared experiences within their team. And it sounds like teammates have been very supportive of JT Brown, again, in that sort of hockey way where it's like, you're on my team, I support what you do, you know, we're there for you. But they don't know the sort of day-to-day of what these guys are going through and what happens away from the rink and, you know, any discrimination they might face when they're just out in the public, especially if they're in a city that's not like a huge hockey market where they might not be recognized right away. Yeah. So and I think, you know, JT Brown is really showing some leadership on this issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's also donated money to get a Confederate statue removed in Tampa. So he's a guy that does not shy away from these big issues, and we don't see that a lot in hockey. Mm-hmm. So it's refreshing to see that from a player that has a lot at stake, and he's not a superstar. You know, like if teams were going
he has something to lose.
And like,
he has something to lose.
He was benched the next game.
Yeah.
He was.
Not because of that, but it shows.
Yeah, exactly.
He's a fourth line guy trying to make his way in this league.
Yeah, I mean, if this was like Jerome Iginla, it would be a different story, because Jerome Iginla would know, it's like, hey, I'm one of the best players in the game. But with JT Brown, like, yeah, he has something to lose, but he believes that the cause is bigger than that, and I think that's pretty laudable.
And it's probably notable that before the season started, Donald Fair, the executive director of the NHLPA, sent out a personal memo to every player saying, look, you're free to express yourself in whatever way I would think appropriately,
right,
that you deem fit, and basically we have your back. And if you ever want to talk about this, we're a phone call away. So I think hockey generally is handling this pretty well. And I think JT Brown handled it very, very well. And, you know, he's getting the usual blowback from the usual fringe, that might be tempted to do that. And I saw something that somebody sent to us today about it, too. So, in the face of that, I think what he's doing is pretty brave, and I think what he's doing is pretty principled, and I think he's going about it the right way.
Mm-hmm. And what I liked about it was he set a good example to me because, a lot of the debate about the anthem, the people who were offended by the kneelers were believing that the flag was disrespected, that, you know, law enforcement or veterans are being disrespected on whole, right? Whereas the actual athletes were saying, no, we're trying to just draw attention to an issue that we feel very strongly about. We're not dissing the veterans.
Police brutality
Police brutality. So for JT Brown, it was almost, okay, fine. If kneeling is going to offend people, I'm going to show that I can still protest in a different way just because I want to be heard and get the point across. And he did it. So I thought it was very impressive what he did there.
Mm-hmm.
We got time for a few reader questions. We'll start with Andrew Coughlin, who says, who or what should the Leafs look for to push them to the elite teams in the league?
Mm. Well, I think you're looking at one more veteran defenseman. Yeah. That would give me a lot more confidence long-term in this squad. I mean, so far it hasn't bit them. It almost did in the Rangers game.
And it almost did last night. Yeah. One player who wears number 51, he had a rough game.
But you do get a lot of... Usually you get better stuff with Jake Gardner, but if they had one more veteran guy... I mean, again, the name Chris Tanev has come up so many times.
Yeah, he's exactly what the Leafs need.
I don't know if Vancouver even wants to move Chris Tanev because he is such a valuable player, but that's the sort of guy that if you added him to the Leafs, then all of a sudden things... They become a much tougher out.
Right. It's really interesting. I wrote about this for today this is right now it's the salad days for this team, right? Mm-hmm. Like they got all these guys on great deals and entry level deals and everything. They're gonna be faced with do we keep or do we trade Connor Brown? You know, that kind of stuff. Those are the questions that they're gonna be faced with in a couple of years when Austin Matthews has a 10 and 6 zeros after his name, on cap friendly, they're going to have to start making those moves. Like right now it's like, well, they can keep everybody. They've got, they've worked out their injury situation, but these questions of how they're going to keep this team together and how they're going to stay competitive are going to come up sooner rather than later.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And for that reason is now the time to make an aggressive move because you do have the salary cap wiggle room before, Matthews, Nylander get their big extensions, Marner as well. And we know the Leafs were trying, right? They went for Travis Hamonic in the summer, and I do think Tanev is the perfect example. It's the shutdown guy. A Jacob Trouba, if somehow he were to be available out of Winnipeg, that's the component they're missing. I guess it's not going to be Josh Manson, who just signed the big extension with the Ducks. It's early, but this Andreas Borgman, he's looking very Cronwall-like with his hitting ability.
Yeah, yeah.
It's still very early to anoint him, the next Cronwall, but you never know. If he's much better than advertised, maybe he becomes that shutdown option. He's certainly bringing a lot of physicality on the back end, on the back pair. Next question, it's a two-parter, because I think they go kind of hand-in-hand, from Jennifer Berthelet. The first part of it is, do you trade Dustin Byfuglien at the deadline? Do you make him a forward or do you leave it as is? That's a pretty epic question from Jennifer. What do you guys think?
I leave it as is.
Yeah, I think it depends on where Winnipeg's at, because if they're at the bottom of the Central, then maybe you do trade him and get as much as you can, because you got to shake something up. Although I will say, I know what the second part of the question is, and my answer probably regards that when it comes to what you should do for a shakeup in Winnipeg.
Yeah, exactly. To me, I mean, and I've said this many times, I even say it when I'm covering fantasy, there's no other Dustin Byfuglien out there. He's such a unique guy. He's 260 pounds. He hits like a brick wall. He can move the puck. He can shoot. He's got just a mean streak. He's so unique, and it's not a guy you should be in a hurry to give away. Right. And he's also signed long-term. That's not even an easy contract to move, particularly. Whatever team's taking him is taking him for what's going to end up being his down years when he's so still earning a lot of money.
Yeah.
I don't see any logic in trading him, and I agree with Ryan. Mm. We're going to get to the next question, which is, what do you do? Also from Jennifer. I like the way she words it. It was Paul Maurice. Good coach or triple question mark? So, I don't know. What do you think, Kenny boy?
You go first.
Oh, Ryan.
Triple question mark.
Yeah.
I think triple question mark's generous.
Yeah, you probably only need one question mark. I think that even though he just signed an extension and Cheveldayoff just signed an extension, this just seems like a make or break year for the Jets. And if there's no improvement, if they can't make the playoffs this year with Shifley and Wheeler and Ehlers and Laine, I mean, it's got to be the coach.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a structural thing that you have to figure out. And early on, again, like when they played Toronto, just the defensive structure was a mess. And it's you had four Winnipeg players all going towards Jake Gardner, leaving William Nylander open for a goal where he could have taken the puck, waved to the crowd, pointed to the exact part of the net he was going to shoot at, and Steve Mason still wouldn't have had time to get over there. He could have Owen Noland it. And that's on the coaching staff to rectify, and if they can't rectify it, then you have to go. Sometimes it is the coach's fault.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I mean, the numbers don't lie, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'll bust it out again.
They just don't.
Five playoff berths in 19 seasons for Paul Maurice.
Yep.
Five playoff berths. Like, that's not a very high standard of excellence. It reminds me of electric hand dryers and bathrooms, which have a horrible standard of excellence. They're awful. They don't work.
They're starting to now.
People just keep using
them. It seemed like it took them like 25 years to figure out that you really got to blow the hot air out really
hard. It's just really. The expectation is so low.
Blow hot air, blow it hard, and you're fine.
If you walk out of the bathroom and your hands are kind of damp, you're like, okay, yeah, that's a pretty good hand dryer. It did its job. And that's kind of Paul Maurice. People love him, and they just give him this long leash. He's coached.
He's the
sad
Dyson
sack
of coaches.
He's coached sad sack teams. And he never had much help in Carolina, but that just goes on and on. That excuse. And he has help now. He's got Mark Scheifele, Blake Wheeler, Dustin Byfuglien, Nikolai Ehlers, Brian Little, Matthew Perreault, Jacob Trouba, good players, and they have terrible special teams consistently year to year, which to me is a sign of points to coaching. And I know, I mean, you know, the one thing I can say is goaltending so far not rectified. I'd like to say I called that. Steve Mason has gotten a lot of mileage in his career off an amazing rookie season. But if you remove that rookie season, his numbers since then, for it's been a decade almost, very average.
Yeah, with Paul Maurice, I wonder if there's something not being, if there's something lost in the translation here. Because I think he's a really remarkably smart guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's a really good hockey mind. I wonder if he's one of those guys like a Perry Pern or a Jacques Martin kind of guy, Kirk Muller, like that just can't seem to get the wins as a head coach, but would be really, really good because he runs a great practice. He runs an incredible practice. I remember when he came to Toronto and he was coaching the Marlies and Quinn was still up with the Leafs, and I talked to players Paul came in to do some practices in the preseason, and some of the players on the Leafs were like, oh my God, I've never been through a practice like that in years. Mm-hmm. Like, it was so high energy, all the ice was being used, so much teaching being done. Like, it was amazing. And it was like, you know, then you had an old school guy like Quinn who did his 3-on-2s and a couple other little things, and then we were done for the day.
Yeah.
You know? So I think he's a good hockey mind. I think he knows the game. He's been around it a lot. I think he's got some good ideas, but there's a disconnect there somewhere between that and winning. And
you
it's
gotta
a result,
shake, you gotta
and
shake
it's a
that
results
snowball.
Oriented business. If you don't win, you don't win.
The snow globe just needs a good shake. In Winnipeg, right? You got a lot of talent there.
Yeah, I don't know if they have a lot of snow in Winnipeg.
Not yet. It's warm. It's green. Not windy at all either. No. Especially Portage in Maine. It's no wind at all.
Portage. Oh, come on. Oh, no, but you can say Portage because it really is part. Like the word is Portage.
Yeah, right? That's why I said it that way. Yes. All right. Sorry, Winnipeggers. I hope you enjoyed the podcast, everybody. Thanks for listening. I'm sure there'll be lots to talk about next week, too. Hopefully this podcast doesn't spontaneously combust the minute we stop recording. Thank you.